भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today there are three verses, and I will do the first two verses by myself, and the third verse is the one on the board. The verses, the canto is number 6, the chapter is 3, and I will start with text number 2. Yamasya devasya na danda banga kuta shanarse shuta purva asit etangune vischati loka samshayam nahit vad anya iti me vinishitam. Translation. O great sage, never before has it been heard anywhere that an order from Yamaraj has been baffled. Therefore, I think that people will have doubts about this that no one but you can eradicate. Since that is my firm conviction, kindly explain the reasons for these events. So King Pariksit has just made that statement. Now, Shukdeva Goswami will proceed to answer him. Sri Shuka Uvacha Bhagavat Purushai Rajan Yamya Pratihatho Dhyama Patim Vigyapayam Asur Yamam Samyamani Patim. Translation. Sri Shuka Deva Goswami replied, My dear king, when the order carriers of Yamaraj were baffled and defeated by the order carriers of Vishnu, they approached their master, the controller of Samyamami Puri and master of sinful persons, to tell him of this incident. Text 4. Yamaduta uchaha kati. Is that on the board? No, because I don't hear hardly anybody saying it. Santi. Aha, Shastara, Jivalokasya, Vai, Prabho, Trividyam, Kurvata, Pala, I'm sorry, I missed the word, Karma, Pala, Abhivyakti, Hetava, Yamaduta uchaha kati santiha shast. Excuse me, did I mispronounce that? Uchuhu, but it says ha in the pronunciation key. Yeah. You can go and look. Yamaduta uchaha kati santi aha shastara Jivalokasya Vai Prabho Trividyam Kurvataha Karma Pala Abhivyakti Hetava Yamaduta Ucha Kati santiha shastaro Jivalokasya vai prabho Trividyam kurvata karma Palabhivyakti hetava Yamaduta uchaha Kati santiha shastaro Jivalokasya vai prabho. Trividyam kurvata karma. Pralabhi vyakti hetava. Yamaduta uchaha. Kati santi hashastaro. Jivalokasya vai prabho. Trividyam kurvata karma. Pala bivyakti hetava. Please chant. Ladies, please. Before proceeding further, I would like to know, perhaps I misled some of the students in the pronunciation of H with a dot under it. Is there a special circumstance in which it is pronounced ho instead of ha? I read from the book, A-H with a dot under it is pronounced like a ha, but maybe there is an exception to that rule. Pardon? Pardon? I'm sorry? Oh, okay. So this says, over here it says A-H. Oh, U-H. That's what was, okay, that's the problem. Thank you very much. So remember, if it's preceded by a, no, over here it says with an A-H. It's not a U. Heitava. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Okay, U-H. So when there's a U preceding it, it's U. Is that right? O? Okay. So, U. So my apologies. I was just trying to go by the book, but I felt that there was some kind of an exception to that rule, and I appreciate your correction. Yes, Prabhu? Yes, please. Is that sir? Is that what you mean? So it should be is that? So can somebody give me a perfect pronunciation of that word? Huh? That's from the spiritual world. We're getting some guidance. Somebody's cell phone is. could you say it again, Archita, the way it should be said so we all come off with Uchuhu? Okay. Should be Is that what you're saying, Druda? Yeah, Uchuhu. Yeah, Uchuhu. Okay. So we finally got that straightened. We can now move on to the class. But it's good to get these things correct. And if I misled anyone, I always like to get it straightened out. So my apologies. And also, we can move on now. Yamaduta Uchuhu. The order carriers of Yamaraj said, Kati, how many santi there are in this world, shastara, controllers or rulers, jiva lokasya, of this material world, vai, indeed, prabhu, O master, trividyam, under the three modes of material nature, kurvataha, performing, karma, activity, pala, of the results, abhivyakti, of the manifestation, hetava, causes. Translation and purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. The Yamaduta said, Our dear Lord, how many controllers or rulers are there in this material world? How many causes are responsible for manifesting the various results of activities performed under the three modes of material nature, sattva-guna, raja-guna, and tamo-guna? Please repeat. The Yamaduta said, Our dear Lord, how many controllers or rulers are there in this material world? How many causes are responsible for manifesting the various results of activities performed under the three modes of material nature? Sattva-guna, Raja-guna, and Tama-guna. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the Yamadutas, the order carriers of Yamaraj, were so disappointed that they asked their master, almost in great anger, whether there were many masters other than him. Furthermore, because the Yamadutas had been defeated and their master could not protect them, they were inclined to say that there was no need to serve such a master. If a servant cannot carry out the order of his master without being defeated, what is the use of serving such a powerless master? Excuse me. Omagina timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakur unmilitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. Of my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So here we see that the Yamadutas are in a state of confusion. Normally, they would get an order from Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, to go and get someone who may be an abject sinner or may have had committed many sins and also perhaps many pious activities. But as long as there were some sins in the person's life, the Yamadutas are there to yank him out of his body. By him, I mean the soul and the mind and the intelligence and false ego or the subtle body, and bring him to Yamaraj for sentencing for a period of time, after which the person will then be sent to another area or another place to endure possibly some bad or difficult or troublesome karmic reaction that he still has to work off, or he may be sent to a heavenly planet. We have a very good example of this in King Nriga. King Nriga had committed numerous inconceivable amount of pious activities, but he also committed one impious activity. And he was brought to Yamaraj and asked, what would you like to do? Would you like to take the benefit of all your pious activities? And then later on, after those are exhausted, take the pain or the difficulties of your impious activities. So his position was that better to get the bad over with, and then I can just coast along in ecstasy for the rest of eternity, or what they believe to be eternity, possibly in the heavenly planets. It is sometimes millions of years they're there, and it seems like an eternity. So he chose to be to go into a hellish position. A hellish position does not necessarily mean that one has to go to a hellish planet. It's a particular consciousness in the hellish planet. And King Nriga desired to get his punishment. And the punishment was that he was turned or given the body of a lizard. And in that body of the lizard, he lived in a well which was on the property of Lord Krishna. And it just happened to be that he also remembered something of his past life, and he kept his mind on Krishna while he was in the well. And it just happened to be that Krishna's sons saw the lizard there, and they couldn't reach him, so they called for their father, and Krishna came, and he saw the lizard, and he knew exactly what the situation was. And he reached down and picked up the lizard. And as soon as he picked up the lizard turned into a very beautiful demigod who's known as Nriga. And he was ready to now proceed to enjoy many, many millions of years in the heavenly planets. Why millions of years? Well, he used to donate cows, especially to Brahmins, not by the hundreds or the thousands, but even millions. He had so many cows, it was actually almost unbelievable. And his only sin was that one day he had donated one of his cows to a Brahmin, and maybe a batch of cows to a Brahmin, and one of those cows wandered out of the herd and came back to King Riga's pastures. And then what happened was that the king wanted to give another batch of cows to a different Brahmin. And so he gave the batch of cows to a different Brahmin. And one of the cows which he had given to the previous Brahmin was in that second batch. So after the second Brahmin had his batch of cows, the first Brahmin who had his batch recognized that the cow that he had been gifted was now in another Brahmin's batch or herd. So he approached the king and he said, you gifted it to me, and somehow it got back to you, and now you've re-gifted it to this other Brahmin. What's the ethical principle of this? As far as I'm concerned, it's unethical. You can't give something to one person, take it back, and give it to another person. So the king said, yes, I'm very sorry that this happened, and I'll be glad to make it up any way I can. So you don't have that cow. I'll be glad to give you, in place of it, I'll give you 100,000 of those cows. He said, no, I want that one cow. He said, I'll give you 100,000. No, I want the one. So he says, oh, boy. So he went to the second Brahmin, and he said, well, another Brahmin's cow that I had gifted had wandered back into my herd, and I gave it to you, and he's upset. Could you please give it to him, and I'll give you 100,000 cows? He says, no, you gave it to me, and it's mine. I'm keeping it. She says, but it's just one cow. I can give you 100,000. He says, no, I'm going to keep it. So the two Brahmins, they were very adamant and very obstinate that they were not going to surrender. The one who was the second Brahmin was not going to surrender, and the first Brahmin was not going to accept the 100,000 cows. So what to do? So the sin remained, so to speak. Although the king, of course, he had given the cows in good faith. He didn't give it with any desire to offend either Brahmin, but it just happened to work out that way. So that for that offense of giving a gift that you had already given to somebody else was considered sinful, and therefore he had to suffer for that and be a lizard for a period of time. So the point I was trying to bring is that a person may have many evil actions or reactions in his past which will bring him painful, punishable reactions for his future. And he may have many pious activities in his past which will bring him pleasures for the future. And the one who decides that is Yamaraj. And Yamaraj, it is mentioned in one of the purports, is that he has omniscience. And he can look at a person and he can know immediately what a person's virtues are, what his vices are, and he can assign the proper punishment accordingly. The purpose of all punishment is not merely to give pain, but to really rectify a person, to give him some understanding, some guidance. And while a person may not remember when he is reborn on earth what his particular sin for which he was punished for in either the hellish planet or even on the earthly planet in a very hellish situation, he may not remember the sin, but because it was such a traumatic punishment, when he comes in contact with that particular temptation, what happens is that something within him tells him, don't yield, don't give in. And we may have all had that type of experience. We can't explain it. But, for example, our heart may begin to beat or pound very strongly. You want to do something, but it's telling you, boom, 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 don't do it. And you feel scared. You feel nervous. You feel uncertain. Sometimes a person will simply, well, so who cares? I'm just going to go through with this. And again, he will commit the sin, and again, he will get some punishment. Other persons may get the same symptom. Not only that, there are other symptoms that palms may sweat, under the arms one may perspire. One may also, his lip may quiver, or his fingers, hands may start to shake. These are all symptoms from within. The supersoul actually gives us these indications that be careful. And while we don't know why we should be careful, because we can't remember the past trauma, we know that we should be. So a person who can take that kind of guidance will ignore or avoid and have nothing to do with that temptation. Another person who is less wise, less knowledgeable, not on a spiritual path, will yield to it and again suffer punishments, which he has already suffered many times in the past. So we have here a very interesting situation. We have the Yamadutas who are in a state of confusion now. They tried to take the soul and subtle body of Jamil to Yamaraj, and they were prevented. And what happened was that, of course, we know that the four Vishnu Dutas, they appeared there, and they said, "Halt, stop, you can't take this person." And they said, "Why can't we take him? We've been given an order by our spiritual by our master." And they said, "Because he's sinless. All the sins that he have committed are now eradicated, or the reactions that he would normally get for those sins, the punishment, it's eradicated because he chanted the name Narayan, which is a name of the Lord, and which is very potent and very cleansing. It's like his soul, so to speak, which is covered with those particular sinful actions, has been washed clean and clear of them, so that he now can begin his spiritual life again. So you cannot take him. If you take him, you will be going against religious principles." So they were completely confused about this. What do you mean, religious principles? Our only religious principles is Yamaraj sends us someplace and we go and we take him. And in this case, they were thwarted. They were prevented from doing this. So this is obviously the first time this has ever happened to them. So that's why they came back to their master and they said, "Well, what's going on here?" Just as, for example, Ajamil, because he had chanted the holy name, not even with the intention of calling God, but simply because he was calling his only little son, Narayan, he was purified and cleansed. And the protectors of those who chant the holy name of the Lord, namely the Vishnu Dutas, they appeared with their blazing, glorious effulgence and their beautiful garments and their club and their disc. So, of course, when the Yamadutas saw them, and not only saw them, but they saw that that these men were not only handsome and very sturdy and very strong-looking, but they also had some weapons. They had a club and they also had a disc. And I don't think the Yamadutas particularly appreciated looking at those weapons, and they made a quick beeline back to their own masters so that no harm would come to them. So they were wondering, well, why didn't our master then show up and appear and tell them to get going and let us continue to do our job? Well, why didn't he come? Is there somebody more powerful than our own spiritual master? So that was their confusion. They were under the impression that Yamaraj was the all in all. And obviously Yamaraj, although being a Mahajan being a master or a great authority of Bhakti Yoga, he knew the value of the holy name. And for some reason or other, he hadn't told them that when someone is chanting the holy name of the Lord, any one of them, he should be left alone. In fact, leave him. Don't even go near such a person. But obviously, they had not gotten that information. Had they gotten that information, then as soon as they heard the name Narayan coming out of the mouth of Ajamil, they would have looked at each other and said, "No business here, let's get out of here." Open the assignment book and go to the next sinner that they would have to yank out and take to Yamaraj. In other words, it was a defeat in that sense. But the purpose why he hadn't given them that information, it appears that it was so that this very wonderful pastime would take place. If, of course, the Yamadutas had left without this argument and without this confusion, then we wouldn't have this very wonderful dialogue, which comes very clearly in this particular chapter called Yamaraj Instructs His Messengers. They wouldn't exist because they would have just left. And that would have been the end of it. And then Jamil would have been free. He would have woken up as he did and then left his wife and children and gone to a spiritual land like Hardwar, Rishikesh, and proceeded to begin where he actually had left off over 60 years ago on his spiritual path. So we see that this pastime was provided really for us to learn how important, how valuable, how potent the holy name of the Lord is. Sometimes when we are associating with someone or something quite often, the person becomes rather familiar. And we can often lose the understanding of how valuable, how important, how useful that person is. And that's because in familiarity, we often have familiar conversation. And familiar conversation often lends itself to levity or humor or friendliness. And in that, we tend to forget how great the Lord, that individual is. For example, in the case of the Krishna's cowherd boyfriends, he didn't want them to know how great and how powerful he is. He just wanted to have fun with them because that's one of the characteristics of Krishna's nature. He likes to have fun and he likes to play like a little child. And so had he told his cowherd boyfriends that, well, wait a minute, you're taking me too lightly. You're regarding me too casually. You have to regard me as the Supreme Lord, then all the fun would be lost. There wouldn't be any play. There wouldn't be any frivolity there. So Krishna accepted that, not as an offense, even though he was the Supreme Lord, maintaining and protecting and holding up the universe. He just wanted to play like a little boy. And those boys who were wrestling with him, playing hide-and-go-seek with him, playing leapfrog and playing blind man's bluff, and also playing like bullfighters, they were having all this kind of fun. And had Krishna taken a more serious position, then those little boys, they wouldn't have served him. So they were serving Krishna in the way that Krishna wanted to be served, just like a little child. And that gave him a lot of pleasure. So the Lord is infinite in his different desires for transcendental pleasure. It goes without saying, really, that those were not ordinary boys. These little cowherd boys were very great saints, great sages, great yogis who had in their previous lives, after performing for millions of years, various types of austerities and various penances, prayers, worship, had achieved such a degree of purification that they were then qualified to associate with Krishna on a very personal level. It's not something that this came very cheaply or easily. They worked very hard for that position. And so as a result of that, and this is mentioned very clearly, some of the various types of sages and came and had this type of intimate, personal, loving association with Krishna. And similarly, the other persons, the elders of the community, Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, and the others, they also served Krishna in their own way. And also later on, Arjun and Bhima and Yudhishthira, the Pandavas, Mother Kunti, Draupadi, they all served Krishna in their own very unique and very special way. And because they were pure in heart, they gave Krishna lots of pleasure. It is with those kinds of persons that Krishna wants to have loving exchanges. So when we read, and Srila Prabhupada makes a very important point of this, that we should not think that Krishna was just playing with ordinary persons. All of these are exalted personalities, and they can be worshipped. In fact, it's very useful to worship these great personalities for no other reason to get their blessings. And if we get their blessings, since they are very dear to Krishna, we will also get Krishna's blessings. And that is the easiest and the quickest means to obtain such blessings. By worshiping, by serving, by glorifying, by adoring any of the great devotees of Krishna. So the ultimate goal of this is to give us an appreciation greater and greater of God's holy name. That even if a person chants it unknowingly, for example, I think it's Haridas Thakur, he mentioned that many times some of the Muslims in Muslim countries, when something goes wrong, we might say damn or something like that, and they say haram. Now, haram means like abominable, terrible, bad. So even a person who says haram has started his path on to liberation. Even if the person chants the holy name and it's a part of another word, but it's there and it's pronounced, then it is sacred. It is valuable and it should be treasured. In fact, any of us who had Dodge Rams, the car, by simply seeing that little label on the side of the hood, you make spiritual advancement if you read it. So, therefore, the Lord has become so merciful, so gracious, so kind, as to not only stay with us as super soul in the heart, to give us guidance and direction and to fill us with transcendental happiness when we chant his name. Not only has he done that, but he's giving us, by telling us the value of this name, the importance of it, the potency of the name, the greatness of it, by doing that, what happens is that we begin to take this name very seriously. We take it, we chant it with great intensity, with great solemnity, not mechanically or indifferently or ho-humly. It's a very important sound, and it makes the difference between truly transcendental life or material death. And that's what the holy name really means for us. So when we chant our rounds, if we chant it with intensity, with devotion, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. So if we worship the Lord, chant his name with devotion, with submission, with total surrender, then the Lord smiles upon us, and we feel that smile in the heart or in the soul in the form of transcendental happiness, satisfaction, fulfillment. It's everything that a person is looking for in the external world through various material sense enjoyments, but is not getting because sense enjoyments can only give momentary pleasure, whereas transcendental pleasure stays with us, it remains with us, it is a part of a consciousness, and it becomes more and more intense the more deeply one feels affection and devotion and love and for the Supreme Lord. And as Krishna says, he says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, do this as an offering unto me. So if we are serving the Lord every minute, every second, every moment, if we are able to remember him by some means, because we are conditioned to not remember him, rather to remember ourselves, remember our own name, remember our own service, but if we can actually venerate and glorify and appreciate the service of other devotees and the service that Krishna has performed by giving us these wonderful holy books, the service that Srila Prabhupada, the pure devotee, has given by writing these books, then Krishna is extremely pleased. And as a result of the pleasure that Krishna feels, he imparts that pleasure to our own soul, and we feel in turn peaceful, joyful. Of course, that is not the goal of doing these of these books. The goal of it is to increase our love for the Lord more and more and more, which will result in not only more service, but a higher quality of service and even more responsibility in that service, which enables us to be effective and useful and beneficial to the humanity which is suffering. And that is another point in this particular movement, is we are not only to gain for ourselves the benefit of the chanting of this holy name, as Jamil did, but we are to share this with as many persons as we can, so that those persons can also get out of their miseries, get out of the difficulties, the troubles, the trials, tribulations, for which there is no end unless they step onto this path of purification, which leads to redemption and ultimate salvation and pure love of God. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments or corrections? Yes, Rabindranath. Does somebody get the mic for so that people on the internet can hear it?
Now you mentioned if we're doing something wrong and we're sweating or our heart's beating, that's a sign from the super soul. So where is that stated?
Can you repeat that?
That you mentioned that if our heart starts beating quicker or we start sweating, then that's the sign from super soul that we're doing something wrong. So
I understand. You want to know where it's written? I've never seen it written. I'm talking from my own personal experience now.
So what about if you're doing something like, well, just like an obvious example, like somebody's giving Srimad Bhagavatam class, so somebody, they're very confident about how they're giving it, but another person may feel a little nervous and they sweat some. So what's...
Well, that's a different thing. When you are giving a class for Srimad Bhagavatam, you may be nervous, but we're nervous simply because we're afraid of what the results are going to be. That shows an identification with our body. When you're identifying yourself with your body and you're hoping to get some applause or veneration or approval, any of this, these are all egotistical expressions. And they, however, by a person pursuing the activity, those things will generally go away, which you just mentioned, sweating and shaking and so forth. I have known sometimes before going on to speak, not necessarily here, but at much earlier in my career, and I would be nervous, just as you mentioned, but after 3 or 4 minutes of speaking, it would go away completely. We're talking about something now that when you commit the sin, before committing it, there's you're nervous and you're shaking. During the commission of the sin, you're nervous, and after, you may be even more nervous because you're conscious, you're sensitive, you're feeling you've done something wrong. You see, I know I've had that experience many times in the past, and it was what taught me or told me, in effect, to be careful, you see. And something deep down mentioned from some previous or past trauma was, in effect, although I wasn't seeing the previous trauma, I didn't know what it was, but something through the super soul was basically telling me, avoid that, stay away from that. You see, even Ajamil, he was hemming and hawing. He was looking at it, and he knew he shouldn't be continue looking at these prostitute and this low-class person, Shudra, who were enjoying themselves. What happened was that the desire to enjoy was still there, and it was still strong, and it took sway, it took prominence, and therefore he became lost. And as a result, later on, little by little, the conscience becomes duller and duller and duller until eventually you don't even have that beating. It doesn't exist because you become pretty much like an animal. An animal is not going to be scared. A person who is, for example, a hitman, he doesn't think anything about killing somebody. It's his pleasure. But to come to that point, one goes through a transformation from being human to being demoniac. Any other? Thank you very much. Glories to Srila Prabhupada.